Hello, I'm Jane Crowther, Editor-in-Chief of Total Film, and welcome to Total Film's Last Picture Show, our new podcast series. The elevator pitch? It's the end of the world and you have one last night at the cinema. What four films are you programming and why? Our guest today is a man who's been called the most irritating man in Britain and is most recognisable for his corkscrew moustache and earworm theme song. The son of a woman who championed the arts in Carmarthen in Wales, he grew up surrounded by theatre and cinema, eventually attending the Guildhall School of Music and Drama, the National Opera Studio, and becoming a member of the Welsh National Opera. Though he's performed in productions all over the world, he's best known in the UK as Gio Compario, the opera singer character he's played in the Go Compare adverts for the last 9 years. He's a radio presenter for BBC Radio Wales and Classic FM and loves nothing better than a night at the pictures. Our guest today is Wyn Evans. Welcome to the podcast, Wyn.
Thank you so much. It is lush to be here,
Jane. Lush, very Welsh. And if you didn't know, you are a Welsh man, and we are going to be talking about a film that is incredibly Welsh in terms of the people in it and the subject in Save the Cinema. But you're in an unusual position, actually, because usually when I talk to people, they're talking about their love of cinema, but nobody's made a film about their love of cinema. And your cinematic experience as a child has been put on celluloid as a film called Save the Cinema, which is about your mum, Liz Evans, who basically fought to save your local flea pit because it was a centre for the community in Carmarthen. And in 1993, she did everything she could to save it from being turned into a shopping centre. So, yeah, I want to talk about that. And it's one of the films you've chosen for your last pitch show. But before we get there, let's talk about your cinematic experience as a kid anyway. What was the first film you ever saw in the cinema on the big screen?
Oh, dead easy, because it was E.T. And they did that regular story of go when you go to see E.T. I don't think there's many people out there, Jane, right, who, when you go to see E.T., the man on the door says, oh, gosh, Bunny, you should come to see E.T. today because the guy who was in the E.T. costume only died today. Then you realise that this has been told to every kid that's ever been to see E.T., no matter when they saw it. The guy died on that day. So, yeah, E.T. And then the Star Wars films, you know, the Star Wars films first time around. Can you imagine, as I was like six, seven, I don't know what I was, but you're there watching that on the big screen. It's the only place to watch a Star Wars film. I've got this weird relationship with cinema, right? We'll talk about it later because I kind of grew up in cinema.
Yes.
But I've been an opera singer for 25 years, okay? So I sang all over the world, you know, everywhere you can possibly think of. I sang as an opera singer. And when I go to watch live theatre, I get this anxiety because I know what can happen in live theatre, okay? Mm-hmm. So you say, you know, I go to see an opera, I'll go see a ballet, or I'll go and see a musical, or I'll go and see a play, and I get an anxiety for the performers.
Yes.
Now, when I go to cinema, it's a totally relaxing process for me because I know nothing can go wrong. It's in the can. It's done. And so it's one of the most relaxing art forms that you can possibly see because it's all finished. And there's something lovely about that.
Yes, nothing can go wrong. Well, if you get a blooper reel like Smokey and the Bandit, you can see how that's gone wrong. But it's done. And it's obviously very different as well from singing opera, isn't it? You don't get much spaceships in opera.
No, that's true. You don't get much spaceships. Although it's been great to see this trend of bringing live theatre to the cinema.
Yeah.
You know, I've done some of those live broadcasts from the Royal Opera House, and I did Phantom of the Opera 25 from the Albert Hall, which was live broadcast around the world. And they're extraordinary. You know, they are brilliant things. Yeah, it's amazing how those two art forms come together. Do you not think?
Yes.
You've got live theatre and cinema. Who would have thought that I could watch a performance in New York in my local cinema in Cardiff? So, it's odd. And talking to cinemas as well, you know, as you said in your intro, my mother saved a cinema, which I'll talk about in a bit. But for me, it's all about independent cinemas, and I'm a bit hardcore on that, I'm afraid. I don't like going to the multiplexes. I quite like one screen or maybe two screens that, you know, a guy runs. We've got a great venue here in Cardiff called Chapter. And, you know, it's exactly that. It's run by the community for the community. And there's something lush about that.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's lovely. So I guess we should move swiftly on to the to the film that's your number one choice, which is
Save the Cinema.
find a way to keep it going.
I've decided to go straight to the top.
Dear Mr. Spielberg, showing Jurassic Park will help save the lyric.
It's part of our history.
Won't get away with this.
You're gonna have to arrest all of us.
Get down from there! No!
We've got to join the fight to save this place.
You're joking!
It's him! On the phone!
Where there's a will, there's a way.
This is probably the first time on this podcast that somebody's chosen a film as their number one choice and have never seen the film. Okay, so let me explain, if I may. My mother was a hairdresser in Carmarthen with a love for amateur dramatics. My dad was a carpenter, and he was teaching woodwork in a local education authority place in a further education centre. And they were looking for another youth leader one evening. So my dad said to my mum, why don't you come along and you could be a youth leader with the kids? Now, this youth centre was rough. Mm. You know, kids were putting cigarettes out on people's hands and stuff like that. It was not a great place to be. Anyway, so my mother goes, and she's got this love of amateur dramatics. So she goes, well, we could put on a pantomime. You know, total Mickey Rooney, Judy Garland style, you know, I've got. So they started this in 1978, and the youth opera, as it became, went from strength to strength doing musicals. And in 1986, my mother thought, right, they need a place to perform, plus Carmarthen needs a cinema. She got tipped off that the local cinema, which had been closed for about 10 years or more, maybe, was about to be demolished and turned into a shopping center or a bar, you know, like one of these Weatherspoons bars. So she said to the owner, right, this guy who had owned a few independent cinemas in West Wales, she said, look, is there any chance I could have the keys to the cinema that I could just put on one final performance and show two final films in there? And he said, yeah, why not? So we went in, and Jane, the ceiling like was on the floor, right? The gold seats had lost their sparkle. It was terrible. And my mother goes, right, to me, she turns to me, she goes, can you smell it? And I said, what? I mean, all I can smell is mold, damp. You know, it was horrible. I was only about 12. She goes, theatre. Can you smell theatre? I was like, not really. Anyway, we moved into this theatre, and they put on a performance of Jesus Christ Superstar. And then my mother said, we need to put some films on. Like, people listening to this podcast are obviously into film. And it was like the best thing, because all the stills and all the posters were there, you know, from the last 40 years. You know, there was Judy Garland films, there was Harrison Ford films, there was all these films, stills and trailers that you used to have outside cinemas. You don't really have them anymore. But anyway, one of my jobs was putting the stills in, you know, and the film that they decided to show in the first couple of weeks was the first one was Crocodile Dundee. Do you remember that?
It's a cracker. That's not a knife. That's a knife.
Yes. Yeah. And he goes, I don't know. It's about 4 o'clock. And he's looking at his watch. And it's brilliant. And then the crocodile comes out of the water and scares you. And everybody comes out talking about it. And the next film, Top Gun.
I feel the need for speed.
I mean, queues, right, Jane? Round the block. I mean, we don't queue for the cinema anymore.
No.
We turn up at a time that kind of suits us, and we see a film. There, it was 7:30. You queued from 6, and you got in, and you run to get the seats. Yeah. If you wanted a snog, you'd go to the back row. If you didn't, then you'd go somewhere in the middle, you know? And Carmarthen had a thirst for cinema and theatre. And so my mother was like, they're not having the key back. She used to wear it around her neck. They're not having the key back. And the council were like going mad, you know, we're going to knock it down. And my mother was like, no, it's not happening. So cut a long story short, the theatre gets redeveloped. My mother gets some arts council funding. The theatre gets redeveloped. And fast forward now, we're 1993. And my mother is now running this theatre. She's running it voluntarily. The whole thing is run by the community, for the community. It's now got very plush red velvet seats. It's got a fly tower. It's got a prop stage. It's got dressing rooms. But day to day, it's still a cinema. Cinema was my love there, okay? And she decided that they would put a punt in for showing Jurassic Park, because at that time there was only a certain amount of films. Before films were digitalized, you know, you had to have the hard copy of the film. And we had projectors there, two Pearl projectors, where you had carbon rods in, negative and positive carbon rods. They would react against each other, cause a spark, and that spark would be bright enough to show the film. Ah, see, that's how it worked.
That's delightful, right? Isn't it?
It's amazing. He was so tactile, and you had to keep turning the carbon rods as the film went on so that you could keep getting this light. And then one of my jobs was to watch for the dots in the corner of the screen, because that meant it was time to shove the board along, get the other projector going, and you could relight, you see? Mm-hmm. So the dots were the sign to change projectors. Every 20 minutes, you had to change projectors. So my mother decides, now we're going to try and get a film on the day of release. And the film she went for was Jurassic Park. We got Jurassic Park for the first day of release. And about 3 weeks before, they said, look, really sorry, you can't have Jurassic Park, because it's just become such a massive success, we have to put it into a multiplex, where they used mirrors then to show the film, so they could show it in several cinemas at the same time.
And how did your mum feel about that? I can imagine she was livid when she got that news, wasn't she?
My mother was absolutely furious and upset. Cinema paid for the theatre, and this was going to pay for theatre for the next, you know, year, basically. Yeah. It was so successful. So she goes to see the mayor of Carmarthen, right? It was a postman by day, mayor by night. And she says to him, look, we meant to have this film, and the kids, you know, the kids from these underprivileged backgrounds, it's all they've got is this theatre. It's a real community hub. It's run by the people, for the people, blah, blah, blah. And the mayor says, I'll see if I can help you, right? So the mayor sends a fax.
Fax, brilliant.
A fax, yeah, to Steven Spielberg in America, right? Now, the mayor in America is a big thing, right? It's a big deal, isn't it? You think Giuliani and all those people. The mayor over here, you know, it's not what it is there, you know, in a small town. Unless you're the mayor of London or the mayor of Manchester. Now, it's a bigger thing. But at the time, it was, you know, not such a big thing. Anyway, Spielberg obviously thinks, oh, God, this is the mayor. So I better read the story. So he reads the story about how my mother saved this theater and blah, blah, blah. And it's, you know, the kids that it's helped, and they put people on the right track. And Spielberg was really touched by the story, and he said, I'm going to send my own copy to them. I want them to have it the day before release, the same day as Leicester Square. He said, because these people deserve it. So within like 10 minutes, the film distributors were on the phone. Yeah, we've got you this copy. You can show Jurassic Park. You can have the premiere. So side by side, although my mother put the clocks forward 5 minutes, so we did go 5 minutes earlier than Leicester Square. side by side, Leicester Square at Princess Diana and Spielberg and all the people, you know, Jeff Goldblum, all those people in it. And we had this premiere in deepest, darkest West Wales in this cinema that should have been demolished, but was actually now a thriving part of the community. And so the film saved the cinema, although it exaggerates some parts and it downplays other parts, is about my mother's life. And Samantha Morton plays my mother, and Tom Felton plays the mayor of the town, and the projectionist, which would have been my dad and stuff, is played by Sir Jonathan Pryce. So it's a stellar cast. It is a feel-good film. It's not reinventing the wheel, but it tells this beautiful story of how communities can come together and they can, you know, they can win.
Yeah.
My mother went on then till 2004. She went on for another 11 years, and she decided to retire at the age of 60. And by the end, she loved the films, she loved the shows, and she loved everything. And you could see as she closed that door on her 60th birthday and left, the lights went out. And within a couple of months, my mother was dead.
Oh, and sorry.
No, it's just how people live for cinema and how people live to give their community this magical escapism that we all need sometimes. And for her, you know, she was abandoned as a child by her father. So I guess cinema and theatre made it okay, because you're living in this magical make-believe world. And if you're in it all the time, then it's just simply wonderful. And that's what I love about Film Save the Cinema. It takes you into that place where you're rooting for the underdog, and the underdog wins. Spoiler.
Yeah. You're also in it, and your brother Mark, who also has a career as an opera singer as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you think that your career would have been very different if you hadn't have had this sort of amazing childhood experience and this love of cinema and everything else that goes along with it.
Absolutely. You know, when I got to music college, I had done so much performing on the stage, you know, whether we were doing junior showtime on a Saturday morning, entertaining, you know, 300-400 children, me on the keyboard, my brother Mark singing, just so that we could raise money to keep this cinema going. So we would do everything. So Saturday morning would be junior showtime. People would drop their kids off. They'd go shopping. We'd make £300-400 for the cinema. And sometimes that was the difference between opening and closing, you know? So by the time I got to college, I'd been involved in musical theatre. I'd worked backstage. I'd worked in the fly tower. I'd worked in the orchestra pit because I was a keen musician. So I kind of knew my way around the theatre and my way around the cinema as well. I was doing all the local adverts, right? This is going to impress you, okay? I was doing all the local adverts for Pearl and Dean for the theatres in Wales. Do you remember those adverts? You used to have them, wasn't it?
The Come Curry House Baltic around the
Cuisine.
Corner.
Yeah, come to Baltic Cuisine after you've seen the film. It's a great place to dine with chicken tikka masala just at £3.95 this week with a free rice and naan. And so I was doing all of those because Pearl and Dean were flogging, you know, advertising to my mother. And little did I know, you know, my life would end in advertising.
I know.
But it was just an amazing grounding. I mean, who wouldn't want to be going to see films every week for free or going to the theatre for free every week? It's amazing.
It is amazing. It's a wonderful childhood. It's idyllic sounding, really. What do you think your mum would have thought of having a film made about her?
Well, it would have been strange. And you say it's idyllic, right? I'm just going to bring it down a second if I can. Because you say it's idyllic, but if I could only see my mother if I went to the cinema. So I had this love-hate relationship because, like, I wanted my mother to be at home, but I also wanted my mother to be at the cinema. But what would my mother think of it? Well, my mother was a very difficult woman. So it's played by Samantha Morton in the film as a very driven, level-headed woman. My mother, you couldn't say no to my mother. So my mother would go into council meetings and basically make them all say yes. Until they kind of gave in. And we're talking very educated people here, like Ewell Tyvee Edwards was one man who's Hugh Edwards, the newsreader's father, you know, not a pushover, a professor in the university, but you just couldn't say no to my mother. You know, if we were having this chat, I'd say something to you that you fundamentally disagreed with. And within 10 minutes, you would be asking me how you could possibly do it. You know, she was just one of those women. I've compared her to people before, right? And I'm very careful in comparing her to this person because obviously there's very mixed feelings. And I don't mean politically at all, but she used to remind me of Thatcher in that she knew what she wanted and she wouldn't give up. And that's extraordinary in the 90s and the 80s for a woman to do that, you know. And at the time, I was embarrassed by it. But now looking back, I'm incredibly proud that she was this strong feminist, really, before, you know, we had proper feminist iconic role models. And what would she think of the film? She'd be thrilled. She'd be over the moon. She'd love it. You know, the fact that we're talking about it on a podcast, the fact that it's been on all the news stations, the fact that it's in, you know, Sky Cinema, it's just incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. A fitting tribute to her, isn't it, really? Let's move on then. We often ask people what cinema you would choose to put your programme of films on. I'm assuming it would be the Lyric that you would put this on.
Yeah, it would be the Lyric. Although I have to say, the Lyric is a 700-seater Art Deco venue, right? Which was, it's just epitomizes those old cinemas. They were so magical. They were so wonderful. You know, you could be 700 people together watching a film. Now, it's not like that anymore. Everything's so little. But I do like the sofa cinemas now. I have to say, you know, I'm 50 now and I kind of wouldn't mind a glass of Chardonnay with my film. But yeah, I probably would have to choose the Lyric. There's something magical about laughing with 700 people, isn't there?
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's talk about film two, which would be what?
Well, I thought about this long and hard. It's Green Mile.
I know violent men. I deal with them day in and day out. There doesn't seem to be any real violence in him.
Until he kills a couple of little girls.
John Coffey is a murderer.
I don't think he did it at all.
Take my hand, both.
You see for yourself.
You're talking about a miracle?
I do not see God putting a gift like that in the hands of a man who would kill a child.
I dreamed of you. We found each other in the dark.
Like you dropped out of the sky.
Miracles are funny things. You never know when they're going to happen.
A film that I hadn't seen until about 10 years after it came out. I was the same with Shawshank Redemption, okay? I'd never seen them, and they passed me by. And then they were on at the local cinema as one of these kind of, you know, retro nights. And I went along. I mean, Green Mile, what a film. I mean, I'm going to ask you something now, and you're probably going to name it, but has Tom Hanks made a bad film?
I mean, that's all in the eye of the beholder. Joe versus the Volcano wasn't great.
No, it wasn't. You're right.
But no, he's a very appealing person on screen, isn't he?
He's very appealing on screen, whether it's Forrest Gump or whether it's Sully. I just find him captivating on screen. And that one, you know, with all the other actors in it, I just loved it. I just thought it was just an amazing film, and it touched me and it made me cry. And I thought, it's one of those ones where you go, why have I never seen this before? You know, and it's so sad, and it's so tragic, and an unfair derailing and a taking of a life that wasn't right. I mean, it was just brilliant. I loved it.
And you think that it's a sort of important film to put on your program. Why? Because it's something that people should see, and you don't want anyone else to have not seen it in their life.
I think you have to see it because it's one of those films that kind of really makes you sit down, makes you think. And you're kind of like, oh God, how on earth did this happen? You know, when you've got Tom Hanks is in it, and obviously Doug Hutchison, and it's just a great film. And it just shows you about being narrow-minded and not willing to think outside the box. And also what can happen when things go wrong. You think any minute now they're going to realize that he's a totally innocent bloke, but they don't. And your heart is bleeding for it. And there was a film, I don't know, I know I'm going off on tangents now, but there's a film when I was little, right, that I can't even remember the actor's name, but the guy plays a clown, right? And he's paralyzed and he can't talk and he can't speak and he's just there and everybody thinks he's dead until they see this tear rolling down his face. And it's those films that you kind of go, where you're really so invested in it,
yes,
that you kind of almost can't watch it because of the anxiety that it causes, you know?
Yeah.
What about Michael Clarke Duncan in it, though? Amazing, oh. Yeah?
Amazing. Yeah. It's a great cast. And it is, as you say, one of those films that is, you know, a microcosm of humanity just in that sort of particular narrative. But it does tell us a lot about ourselves as humans, doesn't it?
Yeah, you've put it way better than I have. Thank you.
let's go on to number three then, which is a bit lighter. What's number three on your program?
Everybody laughs when I say this, but it is Pretty Woman.
Welcome to Hollywood. Everybody comes to Hollywood, got a dream. What's your dream?
When I was a little girl, I would pretend I was a princess trapped in the tower, and then this knight on a white horse would come charging up and rescue me.
Could you tell me how to get to Beverly Hills?
Sure. For $5.
You can't charge me for directions.
I can do anything I want to, baby. I am lost.
All right, okay. You have change for 20?
For 20, I'll show you person.
It's just a brilliant film. It's just a brilliant film. What is not to love? I must have seen it, right? 300 times. It's got the best soundtrack. It's got some fantastic bits of music in it. It's got some brilliant lines when she goes, you know, I enjoyed it so much, I nearly pissed my pants. And then she says, what? And he said, she hasn't enjoyed it so much since she's seen The Pirates of Penzance. And it's just like, what a brilliant line. And, you know, big mistake. Huge. It's got so many good lines in it. It's such a good story as well. And it's got such a lovely ending. Spoiler. That you can't help but love it. And you can't help but get involved with her when she's in the hot tub and she's going to make all that money and she's absolutely thrilled. And then you slowly see her falling in love. And Yeah, I mean, I had the video, right, the VHS of it, and I just wore it out. It just looked like a 3D version by the end because it had all the blue lines around the people. So, yeah, Pretty Woman has to go in to my kind of choice because it's just a fabulous film with some brilliant lines in it.
And how old were you when you saw it? And do you remember sort of the impact it had on you the first time?
So it would have been 1990. It was the year I went to college. I remember playing the soundtrack to absolute death. And we must have had it in the cinema in Carmarthen. We must have had it in the Lyric. And I remember the night before I went to college, I was with my four mates and we were in the pub. And I said to the guy, will you put this on? And he puts it on. And we stood there, four of us together, right, going, we're such good friends. We're never going to break this bond, even though I'm going to London, you're going to Swansea University, you're off to Cheltenham, you're off to Birmingham. And we stood there, arms around each other, and it was like, it must have been love, but it's over now. And we're there like, I love you, I love you. It's the most amazing thing ever. So, yeah, it's got to go in because it's just like the best film ever.
It is. It is amazing.
It should be my number one, actually.
It doesn't matter. This is a whole program. Everyone can see all of it. We're all going to go out for snack breaks in between. Come back. Perfect. And enjoy each film. It's going to be fine. Tell me about your fourth film, because it's not one that you would think people would choose as a sort of favorite. It's a difficult film to love, but a very sort of impactful one.
Initially, I chose this film for the soundtrack because my life is all about music. I think music in films is so important. And having, you know, made some programs and I made, you know, 120 adverts. Until the music goes on, it looks blank because they are little films, right? The adverts are little films. So the music is one of the most important parts to it. And I think this film that I've chosen, the fourth film, wouldn't be anywhere near where it is without the wonderful John Williams soundtrack. And it is Schindler's List, 1993.
Sir, I'm a Jew.
Well, I'm a German. So there we are.
You want these people?
My people, I want my people.
Who are you, Moses?
They say your factory is a haven. They say you are good.
Who says that?
Everyone.
Just a brilliant, brilliant film. I could watch all day. It's fantastic. Ben Kingsley's in it is amazing. I've got two stories, right? Once I was interviewing Liam Neeson when I worked at Classic FM, I said to him, I just love you so much. I don't know what I can ask you. So I'm going to ask you, if you had to describe your smell, what do you think that smell would be, right? It was the most ridiculous question I think I've ever asked anybody in my life. And he goes, I don't know. What about vegetable soup? So I went, all right, thank you. That's so comforting. And it's true. There's something very comforting about Liam Neeson, isn't there?
Yes, yes. He's got a lovely voice.
He's incredibly handsome. Coming back to Schindler's List, Ben Kingsley, right? So we're shooting a Go Compare advert out in Prague. And as I check into the hotel, right? It's quite a nice hotel. So I check into the hotel. And there's a note on the desk, right? But it's upside down. So it's for the staff's use, okay? So this note has been sent for the staff use. And it said, Sir Ben Kingsley is in room 210. Please do not give his room number out to anyone.
Did you stalk Ben Kingsley?
I stalked Ben Kingsley in the Mandarin Oriental in Prague. Because I was not far from him. So I'd wait here at his door so I could go for breakfast at the same time as Ben Kingsley. I mean, I'm a super fan. It's just brilliant. You know, he's just brilliant, isn't he, Ben Kingsley? So, Schindler's List has gone in, partly because of John Williams' score. The violinist that performed it was Isaac Perlman. And, you know, that theme. You can cry listening to that. Now, put the whole Holocaust behind it and all the stuff that Schindler was trying to do, and I'm in bits. I love a good cry. I love a good cry, don't you?
Yes, it's very cathartic to watch a film that makes you blub, makes you feel so much better afterwards.
Yeah.
What other films make you cry?
Who Will Love My Children? You know, that really old film that makes me cry. I mean, I will literally cry at anything. I love a war film. Do you love a war film?
I was sort of drilled into watching war films by my war film loving father. So I have a love hate with those.
Okay. One thing I won't watch apart from Star Wars is science fiction. It's just not my thing. I love a rom-com. I love to cry. I do love to cry. I'm in love with Julia Roberts. So anything that's got her in, I usually end up crying in. So yeah, I'm a blubber, I'm afraid.
That's fine. There's no judgment here on blubbing in the cinema. Especially if, you know, if you've watched E.T. a lot of times, that is one to cry every time that little flower comes back to life.
Again, John Williams.
Yes. So that is your, you've done your four. Very, very different. Yeah. Let's to find out about what we're eating in the snacks as well. Popcorn. Are you a salt or sweetie? Or are you like a minstrels guy or a toffee poppets or whatever they're called?
No, classic. I'm not classic, actually, because I will always go for the biggest one. I don't know why, but it feels like the best value. Okay. So I'll always go for the extra, extra, extra large, even though there's no small and medium. You notice that it starts at large, extra large, extra, extra large, and extra. Anyway, so I'll always go for the biggest one. And I go sweet and salty. Mm-hmm. Right. But what I don't like is, right, and Clapham Picture House do this. I'm going to name and shame here, right? Clapham Picture House do this. They put a spoon of salted and a spoon of sweet in, and then a spoon of salted and a spoon of sweet. I want it pre-mixed. It's got to be pre-mixed. Otherwise, I'm getting sweet and then I'm getting salty. I'm not getting sweet and salty. Yes. I don't want to be pedantic about this, but
it's very important. I know. You really need to take your own sort of bag, shaking bag, don't you? To do some before you then decant it.
You're absolutely spot on. I went to see West Side Story at the Clapham Picture House. Stunning, by the way. And who would have thought that you could do it better than the original? Because that is a brilliant film first time round. No question about it. That is a brilliant film. And that Bernstein score is incredible. So I'm sat there with my salt and sweet popcorn, not sweet and salty. So two very different things. And I'm sat there disappointed in the popcorn, but still loving West Side Story. What performances?
Oh, well, it's your good mate, Steven Spielberg. I mean, are you allowed to dislike any of Steven's films after he did you a solid?
Jurassic Park 3. Do you know what I mean? Steve, come on, give up. But yeah, you're right. He does a good film. Sweet and salty popcorn.
Perfect. What about trailers? Are you a fan of watching trailers? Yep.
Definitely. Do you ever have TMI?
Yes.
Time management issues. So the trailers are great if you get TMI because you're aiming for 7:30, usually get there for 7:40. Then I have to have my popcorn.
Yes.
So obviously, even if there's a massive queue, I've still got a queue. I'd go popcorn before a drink. If I can get popcorn and a drink at the same time, fantastic. But if I've got to go somewhere else for a drink and I've only got time to get one or the other, go popcorn. So trailers, yeah, they are fabulous things. And also, it gives you a good sense of what's coming up because the trailers are generally the best bits of the film, right?
Yes.
So if you've got a crap trailer, you know it's going to be an awful film. So how many people are sitting there, right? You must have done this. I wouldn't mind seeing that. You say to the person next to you, don't you? Because it's okay to talk while the trailer's on.
It's fine, as long as you cease as soon as that get that little message about turning off your phone, then it has to stop.
Is it then, or is it when the rating comes up?
Or the rating, but you cannot talk through the beginning titles. I think some people don't understand that. You can't do that.
Oh, what? It takes them a while. It's like trying to stop a truck, you mean? It takes them a while to slow down.
They're just pressing the brakes. Yeah. They're not doing an emergency stop, are they? They're just gently coming to a stop. Yeah. And then you have that anxiety in the cinema where people are talking and it starts and you're like, oh God, will they talk all the way through this? When will it cease? And then there's the relief if they shut up just as the title card comes up.
Are you a shusher? I'm a shusher.
I'm a shusher.
And lights. Why do people need to look at their phone? I once took a mate, right? We went to a cinema in Croydon And I told him that the arms in the chair, right, were magic and you could get popcorn at the arms. He spent the first 20 minutes in Braveheart, right, looking for the button to get the popcorn out of the arms. It's true. That's a good film. There was a guy in Stirling, I think I'm right here, who had some serious mental health issues, but had been helped by watching Braveheart. He was a very wealthy man. He decided to give a statue of William Wallace to Stirling. And what he actually gave was a statue of Mel Gibson playing William Wallace to Stirling. Honestly, look it up, right? It is Mel Gibson's face on this statue, so much so that they've had to put a cage around it because people were throwing stones at it.
Error.
There we go.
A nice thought. Mm. Final question then for our programme. Mm. You've talked a lot about soundtracks, so you probably have a really good idea of this, but as the cinema screen burns and it's all over, what is the soundtrack that you'll be playing?
I mean, that is a big one to ask, right? Because you've got so many themes. I mean, the theme to Top Gun. I mean, I can't wait for Top Gun 2. I can't wait, right? Then you've got Pretty Woman with some just sensational tunes in it. You've got Schindler's List with that wonderful theme. Can I go for a different film soundtrack? Or has
absolutely.
It got to be one of those?
No, you can go for anything.
I'm going for Bodyguard. Whitney Houston's Bodyguard, right? That song, as she dances, if I should stay. And I had that soundtrack right at that time. So they were all released within a few years of each other, wasn't it? So there's Pretty Woman, Bodyguard, Robin Hood, Look Into My Eyes. Again, brilliant soundtrack. That was a brilliant soundtrack, actually. There was some great music in Robin Hood with Kevin Costner. Where's he now? Anyway, Bodyguard, right? Kevin Costner, there he is. And Whitney Houston. Anyway, I had the CD, but I had a scratch on the CD. So this is how mine used to be, right? This is a true story. If I should stay. Then you'd have to kick the CD player. Stay. I will only be by your side. So there's so many good songs in that she did, and some extra songs by other artists. I tell you what, I think it would have to be the Bodyguard, because there's emotional moments, but there's uplifting moments. There's some quite symphonic moments when she loses faith in Kevin Costner. There's some lovely instrumental moments. So yeah, I'm going with Bodyguard.
It's a great one. We will play out with I Will Always Love You. That is fantastic.
I will always love you as well. I just want you to know I will always love you.
Oh, thank you, Wynn. Okay, thank you so much for sharing your programme of movies with us at Total Film. We look forward to seeing you in your cameo in Save the Cinema, which is out in cinemas this week and on Sky Cinema, ready to see in a small screen or a large screen. Thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And remember, for £250 free access on your car insurance, no compare.
So Wynn's last picture show programme will be Save the Cinema, The Green Mile, Pretty Woman and Schindler's List. Let us know on Twitter if you'd be up for sitting in the dark for that lineup. But for now, thanks for sharing your programme, Wynn. It's been a pleasure. Really interesting selection, really enjoyable. We'll be back with another last picture show. So do come back to see who's in the projector booth next time.
So goodbye, please don't cry. We both know I'm not what you need. And I will always love you. I will always love you.
That was the Last Picture Show podcast from Total Film. Let us know what four films you'd watch at the end of the world. You can tweet us on @TotalFilm or connect with us on Facebook or our Instagram page.